I've got a better idea. Gregory, how about some coffee?
Get it while it's hot! Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Indiana Jones Universe, the podcast that explores the expanded universe of Indiana Jones as we discuss the Young Indie television series, the Further Adventures comic books, the Staff of Kings and Emperor's Tomb video games, and so much more. As always, I'm Will.
And I'm Max.
And thanks for joining us for episode 62, in which today we're continuing our discussion and exploration of the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones comic series with issue number 25, Good as Gold. In this single-issue comic series, Indy travels to the Peruvian Andes to meet an old friend named Jesse, who has hired him to translate a stone tablet that might lead them to the El Dorado treasure. However, other people are after it, including an industrialist named Ivor, who wants to seek the El Dorado treasure for his own wealth. However, when Indy leads Ivor and Jesse to the landmark, they discover that the treasure is a hoax and actually was a different Incan tomb made to trick the Spanish conquistadors. So in this exciting adventure that deals with one of the greatest archaeological discoveries, let's jump into this one, shall we?
Yes, jumping right into it. I want to mention a fun fact, actually. This is Marion's last appearance in the Marvel comic, The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. She was originally supposed to be in issue 35 as her last one, but that ended up getting canceled. And I also wanted to mention that I really love the art, and especially the cover in this one, especially compared to our last comic that we reviewed. This one is full of color and detail, and I especially love the little cactus they added at the bottom next to the rail track. Really gives it that attention to detail.
Yeah, I would agree as well. I really love the sort of art style of this one. Obviously, we're in South America, which is a location Indy has been before, but I also did notice that just kind of the style of this really gives you that classic old adventure archaeology feel. Kind of reminded me of the movie Secret of the Incas a little bit, kind of that sort of art style. And yeah, a great cover as well, which actually kind of reminds me of the Phantom Train of Doom a little bit, or maybe the prologue to Last Crusade, as we have that great shot of Indy and Jesse on the back of the caboose there being chased by a bunch of people on horses, you know, on this great train track. Just a classic Western adventure idea, which I really like. And I think it's important to note as well, you know, you talked about Marion. This is actually Marion's last appearance, which wasn't intentional. Obviously, there's the scene in which Indy gets the letter at the end and finds out that Marion is obviously upset that Indy wasn't there. But really kind of cool to think about how they were going to wrap everything up, especially seeing as though most of the comics after this are part of a 2 or 3 part story, especially the one right after this, Trail of the Golden Guns, a classic. Really cool there. And then, of course, most importantly, the fact that the El Dorado is included in this, which I really like, because when I think about archaeology in Indiana Jones, what better way to have a story involving the El Dorado, which is such an important archaeological, you know, discovery, especially in regard to, you know, Mayan and Incan culture. I really love that we focus on this in this one.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, starting right off the bat, I noticed something at the very beginning in the first scene here. Jesse is obviously not too happy to see him, but Indy seems to be wearing 2 belts.
Yeah, I noticed that as well, actually. Really kind of weird, actually. I'm not sure. I want to say that's a mistake, but I don't know how they would have noticed the first one if they were drawing that. I'm curious, actually, if that was something different, because you'll notice he has kind of like his revolver on the side as well, which that could be also what that's for as well, but kind of interesting. And the shading on his shirt also has this kind of blue-gray tint to it as well, which I didn't really absolutely love. I guess it's not a huge big deal, but yeah, that's kind of weird. And also at the end of the comic, you may have noticed he had blue square glasses, not his traditional wire-framed round ones, which I did not like as well. But again, you know, it's each one's going to be different. But I did like the close-ups on Indy in this one. I know we talked about in the last one how Indy didn't have his fedora in most of the comic because they were at the club the most of the time with Marion. Here, I really like the, you know, classic tradition Indy style, which you really have, and I think it's very authentic.
Yes, definitely. And I really like the little bit of a change with the red overcoat. It really gives Indy's attire a nice contrast and really, you know, makes I personally, I think that fits really well with his attire.
Yeah, definitely. And I also like as well how in each medium that we talk about, and this is so prevalent in young Indy, and I feel like we actually don't talk about this enough, but the fact that in each different medium, whether it's the TV show, the video games, they always have an opportunity to just slightly change Indy's attire. And some people might argue, well, that ruins the whole tradition because, you know, it's always a certain satchel, a certain leather jacket, a certain shirt, certain pair of boots, a certain fedora, obviously, you know, but I think that also kind of adds to, you know, how his style changes. And also, you know, Indy's not the same age in every movie and every TV show and every comic and video game. So I do like the little bit of changes that are kind of fun to spot out as well. Speaking of art that you were talking about, I love the font on page 2 here, right after the comic, where it says good as gold and those two O's are looped together. Really, really love the font there. Kind of a cool way to open this up as Indy spots Jesse and she actually points a gun at him, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes, definitely. And also something I just noticed, actually, is that Indy's whip is blue.
Really? I think that must be just some sort of coloring tint there. That's definitely not a blue whip.
Yeah, well, it may just be, you know, an artifact of how they colored it, but I just thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, a whip you usually think of as, you know, leather and brownish, but it's very interesting to see that there.
Yeah, definitely, and I do as well like how there's also there's some cool images of the shading that they do with kind of this, like, cool yellow, and again, I just love, you're talking about, you know, the color in this episode is just so rich, you know, especially in this comic, there's lots of stuff going on where you just have that rich color that I love, and yeah, so the premise of this basically is really just that Jesse and Indy already are friends, actually, and we don't really know much about Jesse as a character. I can't remember if she's in anything else. I believe this is her only appearance in the entire canon, but she could be somewhere else that I'm forgetting at the moment. But anyway, they have this sort of history together, and she basically hired a translator from the National Museum to basically translate this stone tablet that she found, which she believes could pinpoint the location of the El Dorado. And of course, the one and only Dr. Henry Jones Jr. himself was the translator that they hired from the museum, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, she literally says, I asked for a translator, not you.
Right. And that, I think, communicates almost the sly persona that as Indy responds there. You know, apparently he's an adventurer, but doesn't take his work seriously. And which I thought was hilarious that she said that, because that did kind of remind me of sort of Indy's persona.
Yeah, I mean, and that obviously that's not true. We know that Indy takes his work very seriously, but also, you know, has that good sense of humor that he loves to use, especially around his friends. And that is definitely more apparent here because, you know, obviously he's saying, can I help it if I enjoy my work so much? You know, he's definitely trying to convince Jesse to let him, you know, stay with her and translate the stone tablet. And, you know, she eventually is reluctant and lets him stay, which is very cool. But we, at the end of page 2, we actually see some binoculars and a gun, and they say, okay, boys, he's in. Let's go. And that really does not convey anything good is about to happen.
Yeah, kind of interesting there, actually, as we see that, you know, they're pointing the gun at the hut there, and I love the kind of the interior of the hut that they're staying in together. It's really cool there, yeah, again, this extended history, I like how they bring up that apparently they met in Cairo. Kind of interesting. Obviously, we don't really know much about that, and then, of course, they're just kind of bickering and arguing here, which is hilarious, by the way, you know, how apparently, you know, there was some sort of mishap with, you know, Indy spilling a drink or something, and, you know, he deserved it or something hilarious like this. And, yeah, and then she brings out this stone ink and tablet, which she claims might be the most important discovery of her career. And there's something I wanted to mention here, which I thought was very not sort of the Indy way. He says here, what's so special about this stone tablet? Which I found, I'm not sure if he was trying to be, like, sarcastic about that, but I felt that that wasn't really something Indy would actually say, because he's always so particular about anything he finds and finds importance in really anything, that the fact that he would say that I thought was a bit unrealistic.
Definitely. And moving right along, you know, she is explaining what the stone tablet is and the Incas and the, you know, the legend of the El Dorado. And something I also like is as they're looking at it, Indy says a classic line. He says, "Sweetheart, we're about to find us a fortune." And that sweetheart line brings back many good memories to Willie and Temple of Doom.
Yes, I noticed that as well. I wish they would have added Fortune and Glory at the end, because that would have been awesome to bring back that Temple of Doom memory. But yeah, there's that one quote in Temple of Doom that I really love. Willie says, you know, "Oh my gosh, this place is completely surrounded." And then Indy remarks, "That's why they call it the jungle, sweetheart." And yeah, hilarious quote. I always love that one, just to kind of go again with Indy's persona. And I love how he said something similar there. Wish they added the Fortune and Glory part, though, to really bring that ode to Temple of Doom. I actually can't remember when this one was released, because they did release these comics over a period of 3 years, if I'm remembering correctly, and Temple of Doom did come out towards the end. So I believe Temple of Doom had already come out at this point. I can't remember exactly, you know, where the timing is in terms of did it come out before this issue or a few issues before. I can't exactly remember, but there is one towards the end that does include Short Round. So Temple of Doom did come out at some point when they were writing these comics, which is pretty cool that they added those references.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I guess the only difference now is that Jesse doesn't scream like Willie does all the time.
Right, exactly. It's nice to have that break from Willie screaming 24/7. Oh my God. You know, it's so funny that we joke about that, because, you know, that happens basically throughout, you know, the entirety of the movie. But it also adds to, I think, who Willie is. Like, if that wasn't in there, I don't think I would like the movie as much, you know, because it's just, it's so specific to Willie, and especially coming off of Marion, who usually yells at Indy, or, as we saw in the first scene in Marion's bar, just literally gives him a right hook and punches him. And so it's kind of funny that Willie has a different way to get on Indy's nerves.
Yes, definitely agreed. And, you know, right after this happens, there's a big action scene. The door slams open, and it's like, "Expecting company?" And she's like, "No, my crew's still at the dig site." And he's like, "Then who?" But gets cut off.
Yeah, and we finally meet Ivor here, who is just this classic old crook, again, who just wants power and wealth. That's his motive and greed, basically. And I love the quote here. It's a very simple one, but I kind of like how they added it, because I can just envision this happening. "Ah, the famous Indiana Jones," is what Ivor says right when he enters the room. Really like that they threw that in there. And again, this is one of those situations where the color palette here is really nice. I love all the different colors in that one shot there right as the crooks enter the door. And by the way, one of them actually looks very similar to Barranca, I noticed. At least the hat does.
Yes, I agree. I noticed that as well. It's pretty funny. I wonder if they took inspiration from him.
Yeah, I mean, all the crooks kind of, you know, look a little bit similar, especially, you know, the way they dress and, you know, the style there. But
they
I did notice, yeah, but he did look very similar to Barranca, because they kind of reminded me of kind of, you know, all the people that Indy was with at the beginning, especially that similar style when Indy pulls out his gun and Barranca pulls out his gun as well. That kind of opening scene there kind of reminded me of that a little bit, but kind of interesting to see what they were doing. And then there's this scene here that I thought was pretty funny. Ivor says, "Hand over your gun, Jones." And Indy remarks, "I see your point," and just hands his gun over, which is kind of interesting. And then we see Jesse grabbing this kind of rifle, but gets thrown out, which is kind of a weird scene here, and which transitions into almost Indy kind of reluctantly, you know, letting them take them and win, as he then begins to translate the actual tablet.
Right, which is hilarious. And, you know, I love how, you know, the crook grabs the rifle right before Jesse does. And he's like, "The next move like that will likely be your last." I love that kind of, you know, that almost intimidating kind of line. But, you know, Jesse does not seem fazed by that at all. She's like, "Don't threaten me, you thug." And I love that. And you're right, Indy does start translating the tablet. It's very interesting as Jesse and the thugs and Ivor kind of, you know, are talking about what is going to happen, how Indy is going to make them rich.
Yeah, and one thing I also thought that was kind of interesting here, which I was disappointed this didn't come back. You'll notice right when, at the beginning of the comic, when Jesse held Indy to gunpoint, she puts this kind of, like, pistol or revolver that she has into her boot, which I thought was, first of all, kind of funny. But secondly, when she pulls it out to shoot Ivor, Indy stops her from doing that and says, "This will be useful later," which I originally, when I first read this comic a while ago, I thought would be some sort of foreshadowing to the end. Unfortunately, that never actually comes up at the end, so kind of disappointed why they said that, because it would have been cool, because they had two subtle, like, small details to the fact that Jesse had this, like, revolver in her boot. and it never comes up at the end, which I kind of felt disappointed by, unless I missed something, but kind of disappointed that maybe that was alluding to some sort of foreshadowing that they just never really used at the end. So, yeah, and one other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if you caught on to this, Max, but I found it funny how basically the crooks, and specifically Ivor, said they've been tracking Jones and they know about the discovery of the El Dorado, and he said that he had contacts at the museum, which I was like, wait a second. You'd think that the museum would be, you know, people like Marcus and Marion and everyone back at the National Museum. How did they have some sort of insider at the museum? Wasn't sure exactly what they were referring to there, but kind of interesting.
Yes, definitely. And I also love how, you know, they have Dr. Jones translate it if he ever wants to see Marion again. And I like that because, you know, we know how important Marion is to Indy. And Ivar is actually surprised that, you know, Marion is not with him. Meanwhile, back at Marshall College, Marion is there and is not very happy with Indy. She says, "Indiana Jones, I'll kill you." And meanwhile, she is talking with Marcus and, you know, kind of gets pissed and marches off the stage.
Yeah, really loved Marion's feistiness there. I thought that was very, you know, reminiscent of her character. Apparently, Indiana Jones was going to get some lecture, and of course, other adventures just made him blow that right off. So, you know, he we see Marcus there is taking over the lecture. And yeah, kind of interesting here as well. I thought the quote was pretty funny that you mentioned just there. "Indiana Jones, I'll kill you," as she just mutters that to himself, because I can hear Karen Allen saying that in that, you know, just a very specific way, to the point where I really thought that was a classic quote there. And then we transition into probably my favorite shot in maybe the entire Further Adventures series. We see that Indy has been translating this all night, and we see this amazing, cool shading here of this kind of yellow and blue tint, kind of going back to what you were talking about with how maybe why was the whip blue. Just the color in here is really nice with the rich lantern there, as we see Indy is still translating it in the morning.
Yes, and meanwhile, I love how the thugs are asleep in the background. You know, it really adds that tinting and that shading very, very nice. And I love the next scene where Ivor says, "How well do you work with a broken arm?"
Oh, right, yeah.
He's like, "You better finish it up, otherwise you're going to be getting more, you're going to have to do more than just translating."
Yeah, it's hilarious. I love as well, you know, I felt like they added a little bit more to Ivor's character, because again, we've talked about how all these villains, you know, are so stereotypical, but I did feel like there was enough here to make Ivor kind of like at least a little bit likable, to the point where, you know, at least you found it yourself engaged with the fact that there was a villain who kind of was stopping Indy at this point. And then we transition into the scene in which was actually our quote from the beginning of today's episode, which is a hilarious scene, by the way, as Jesse goes to get coffee, and we kind of realize actually what Ivor's motive is at this point. We find out that basically his father had a bunch of wealth and just basically kind of disregarded his son. And so I like that they added that backstory in there to kind of at least give us a reason for why he's even after this stuff in the first place. Because usually, you know, for some of these guys, you know, especially for, you know, Belloc, Molaram, and Donovan, it's so clear as to why they want the antiquities Indy is after. But in the comics, there's just not enough time. And so they're just like, hey, here's this character, you know, here's Busby. We have no clue why he wants this, but he just does, you know? And so with this, I like that they had a little bit of a backstory in there to kind of give some motive for why maybe Ivor wanted the wealth of the El Dorado in the first place, which is kind of cool. And then we have this great scene here in which Indy kind of uses his leverage after translating the stone tablet, as he dumps the coffee on Gregory there, punches, and they have this huge brawl, which is hilarious.
Yes, I also love how they say, "You must be crazy, Jones. We all have guns." And he says, "Then I better do something about that." Just whips all the guns out of their hands.
Yeah, definitely love the inclusion of the whip. You know, full throttle, no brakes there, as he pulls it out and whips all the guns out of their hands. And there's some great one-liners in there as well that I love. And yeah, he basically grabs Ivor, throws him out. And we have an interesting scene here in which Indy actually lied about how long the translation took, because Jesse clearly says, you know, she's upset. She's like, you know, you're some translator. It took you the whole night. Andy's like, yeah, that took me about 5 minutes. I just was trying to pass the time, because he did something very clever here, as he basically wanted to wait until 6:30 a.m. so that when they did get the opportunity to, you know, start this kind of brawl with Ivor, they could quickly escape and hop on this train, which is probably one of my favorite sequences in this story here, which is really cool. And then Indy takes Jesse for a joyride down a rock slide as they quickly have to catch the train that's leaving the station.
Yes, and I love how Jesse says, "Jones, shut up." You know,
right.
She is really not happy with him. And, you know, they say they missed the train, but they jump on just at the very last minute as the goons are catching up to them. But Indy just grabs Jesse's hand just in the nick of time as the train speeds down the runway and they get on just and leave everybody behind.
Yeah, I really like this sequence with the train, because I always feel like that makes a good action set piece, especially coming off of Phantom Train of Doom, which is one of my favorite Young Indy episodes. I feel like there is just something really cool about that sort of action set piece in a traditional Western or adventure movie like Indiana Jones. And we see that on full display in Phantom Train, and I love how they added that here in the comic, because we see that Jesse just barely jumps on, and as the train gets faster, Indy decides to whip onto this like hook on the top of the train and just jumps on and grabs Jesse's hand just in the nick of time. So I like that, you know, really kind of you can envision what these scenes are. And one thing we should actually make note of as well is apparently Indy didn't actually copy the translation down on the paper for them. I was kind of confused as to what he meant by this in terms of like how he actually did the translation, but apparently he actually didn't leave the papers there with the translation. So it kind of is weird how Ivor and the rest of his crew actually finds the El Dorado cave in the end, because apparently they didn't have the translations all along. So I'm not exactly sure what was going on there, but apparently there was some confusion there about, you know, Indy supposedly taking the actual translation and not leaving it back at the cabin, which is kind of interesting. One thing I wanted to mention, actually, Jesse reminds me a lot of Maggie from Staff of Kings. I feel like they have a very similar character type. You know, both of them are kind of annoyed with Indy and also after the artifact a lot more than, you know, Willie or Marion would be, per se.
Yeah, I mean, the only difference here is that Indy and Maggie kind of have a little bit of a relationship, and here it's just friendship. So, but
right.
I do see your point. Like, they're both annoyed with Indy, but they also know they have to stick with Indy if they want to have any chance of finding the treasure.
Right, exactly. I think that was just kind of interesting to see, like, you know, how they kind of changed this as well. They didn't really make it a huge sort of like love relationship, which you kind of have in some of these other comics, but Marion is in here enough to the point where they have to change this up a bit. And I did see some similarities there with kind of Maggie and just the similar sort of, you know, persona that they have and their charisma and so forth, which is great. And then we see that, of course, all the crooks are on horses going after the train. And then finally, Jesse has a great quote. "You always do things the hard way," as he remarks about Indy always jumping on the train. And this short-lived victory as Ivor yells, "Jones," and I can just hear Belloc's voice anytime that's
yes!
in the comics.
Yes, I could hear Belloc's voice as soon as I heard that, "Jones!" Ivor reminds me a little bit of Belloc, you know, with the goons, and, you know, he reminds me a little bit of Belloc.
Yeah, I kind of see that. I do understand, especially, like, way more than Donovan, who is, like, you know, pretty serious and he, like, knows what he's doing. I do see kind of the similarities to Belloc there. I would say, though, that I think what's interesting is I feel like Ivor relies on his henchmen more than Belloc does. And it's kind of interesting to see how this translates into everything, because we actually don't have a lot of, like, lines or quotes from any of the other guys, except for Gregory, who gets the coffee spilled on him. But, you know, it's just kind of interesting, you know, how that dynamic changes with each villain that Indy encounters.
Yes, I guess he kind of reminds me of Major Tote. You know, Major Tote relies on his henchmen a lot.
That is a fair point, actually. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, right as they get off the train, they decide they have to climb a mountain to find what is supposedly the El Dorado treasure. And, you know, they are looking for something called the Standing Stones. And, you know, Jesse's like, "What does that mean?" It's like, we'll know when they see them, probably because they're stones that are just standing straight up and down.
Yeah, it's kind of cool how they show the El Dorado here. Because, again, one of the things I think is so interesting is, like, thinking about the MacGuffin, or, you know, the artifact that George Lucas always chooses. And when I think about, like, the movies, it's always an artifact that has some sort of religious or supernatural element to it, not necessarily something that is just a full-on archaeological treasure, if that makes sense. Like, the idea of El Dorado, in my mind, is, like, the perfect match for an Indiana Jones adventure, but it really is a lost city. You know, it's not necessarily an attainable artifact. So it's interesting how the MacGuffin changes in the comics, where it's more of, I think, finding some sort of specific thing, because we also see how there's many lost civilizations. Like Africa Screams, for example, the Crystal Skull was a little bit different in that one, where, you know, you had to actually find something or an entire sort of monument. So I feel like the MacGuffin and the way that the artifacts change in the comics is kind of interesting, because it still does remind me of the movies, and I feel like the El Dorado was a perfect fit here.
Yes, definitely. I agree. And, you know, they find the spot, but it does not end well as they hear guns right behind them.
Yes, Ivor and his crooks have actually showed up, and it's cool how they have to, like, find the actual temple first, as, you know, the mountain facing the rising sun, as it's called. They climb the rocks, they find the standing stones. And by the way, I love that yellow shadow shot. Again, we talked about kind of the shading here with kind of the yellow and the blue and why those colors are a little bit more, you know, focused here. Kind of interesting there as they're held at gunpoint. And then a great quote by Ivor here. "Well, Dr. Jones, I'll let you live long enough to see it," as he wants Jones to actually find the stones and get the entrance into the El Dorado.
Yes, and I also love how he asks Jones to give him his gun again, and this time give him the whip as well. That's very interesting because, you know, we know that Indy escaped using his whip last time, so they've gotten a bit smarter. And Ivor calls it a dig, and they are trying to push this huge stone out of the way that is very, very heavy.
Right, and we see that Jones enters with a lantern here, and again, kind of going back to the fact that how did, you know, Ivor and his men actually find it if they didn't have the translation first? Kind of interesting how they were able to track down Indy, but all said, we finally go in and we see this huge, beautiful golden tomb of what we think at the time is the El Dorado, and it has all these hidden Incan secrets. And I love the quote that Indy says there, which is kind of interesting. He says, "This El Dorado lost civilization could give us more hidden Incan secrets than the museum could ever know about." Kind of interesting. Something along those lines, I think. And we finally see that there's this death mask on the wall, which kind of leads Indy to believe, wait a second, is this actually a catacomb or a tomb or something? Kind of interesting as they finally realize maybe something is different here.
And, you know, we see that Ivar, it doesn't matter because, you know, there's so much gold in here that he's going to be rich. It doesn't matter if it's the El Dorado or not because, you know, we can see his face. He's just hungry with power.
Yeah, I love the close-ups on Ivar. Really kind of shows his greed and wealth in this entire comic. It's just kind of, it almost comes off as comical, I think, which I think is kind of ironic considering what actually happens to Ivar in the end.
Yes, I definitely agree. And, you know, Ivor here is actually trying to get revenge on his father. He's obviously very angry. And then Indy punches and gives one of the goons a right hook, and his gun goes off. But Jesse notices something, that the bullet only grazed the wall.
Yeah, there's this very interesting scene here in which we kind of set up this whole idea how Indy realizes that this tomb is actually almost a hoax, and the Incas basically created this fake tomb for the Spanish conquistadors to try to keep them away from finding the El Dorado. So they almost kind of had these clues in these stone tablets to almost make them think they had found it, which is kind of interesting because you may have noticed that the El Dorado supposedly is a lost civilization. And when they arrive, there's that huge death mask on the what they think is just a golden wall, which would obviously lead them to believe that it isn't a lost civilization like El Dorado was supposed to be. So very, very interesting. And I love how Indy says here, a great quote, "Another present from the Incas," as they finally realize they don't actually, they haven't discovered El Dorado. And we finally see it destroys, kind of the entire sort of temple there as Indy finds that like little lever in between and pulls it. And we have this huge kind of like almost one-page piece of sort of Ivor's greed and this great sort of, you know, this great depiction of all of these rocks falling on him as he still tries to get the wealth and the power, and Indy and Jesse actually escape.
Yes, I love the quote that Indy says. He's like, "Jesse out now," and she's like, "What about you?" And he's like, "I'll follow right behind as soon as I give Ivar something to occupy himself with."
Right.
And I love that as all of them, basically get buried alive.
Right. And it's kind of interesting how, like, the entire ceiling and fortress collapses, because it's interesting to think about how Indy is so adamant about giving up this archaeological treasure, in the sense that he, I feel like, really is, like, kind of challenged by Ivar's men and the fact that they're always after him, to the fact that he just reluctantly lets the whole thing, like, tumble. Like, sure, maybe it's not the El Dorado, but there is significance of this historical tomb, and he just, immediately pulls the trap lever, and immediately the entire fortress just kind of comes to pieces. And so it's kind of interesting there, but I do like the depiction of Ivar's greed, and just you can see the just lust for power that he has in this great concept art that is drawn here, as we see Ivar and his men try to grab all the treasures, but they can't escape just in time as the temple collapses on them. And yeah, and finally we kind of lead to the last page here with Indy and Jesse. And I like this hilarious sly remarks by Jesse. She's like, "You almost could have gotten us killed." And Indy's like, "Well, if you want a translator, maybe ask for someone else next time," which I thought was a classic.
Yes, very classic. And actually, we transition back to Marshall College, and Marcus is like, "Indy, you're back." And he asks how Jesse is, and he hands Indy the letter that Marion wrote for him.
Yeah, kind of interesting that we have the last appearance of Marion in these comics. Kind of interesting here as he opens up this letter and reads it, and it's basically Marion's just pretty upset, and she's left, and she says, "Don't come looking for me." And yeah, kind of a weird ending, as I can't remember the exact quote at the end, but I think there's some like two-word sentence that Indy says in response to reading the letter, which is kind of interesting. And by the way, this is what I was kind of talking about at the beginning. I don't really like Indy's glasses in this scene. Again, they don't really seem like something Indy would actually wear. They're not the circular wire frames that he has. They're a little bit different, but again, that's just being like super picky. But yeah, that is the end of issue number 25, Good as Gold, an adventure with the El Dorado and Indy's old friend Jesse. And then we see a falling out from Marion and Indy yet again. So without further ado, what do we think of this one?
All in all, I really liked this one. I liked kind of Ivar as the, main villain. I think he was a good villain. I mean, he kind of had that classic in-depth, kind of deep-rooted troubled history where he, was just hungry for power. But, I've noticed something. A lot of indie villains, it's not that they're just hungry for power. They're trying to get back at someone usually. In this case, Ivar is getting back at his dad.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I also really liked the dynamic between Indy and Ivar in this one, as well as just the entire plot of including the El Dorado. I thought it was a really, really great choice to do something about, kind of the Incan civilization of El Dorado, because I think that's such a great indie adventure. I mean, if you really like the archaeological, kind of aspect of the Indiana Jones movies, I really highly recommend taking a look at these comics, because they really put that on full display. And especially, again, I like what you said. I feel like Ivar had a lot more depth as well. And just the subtle details in this one, I thought really enriched the experience, The comics we've been talking about in the podcast so far are just some of our favorites. There's so many comics, 34 in total. Max and I have most of the collection, but we don't have each and every single one. So instead of doing each and every one, we wanted to do some of our favorites. And I think both of us agree that this one came out as one of our favorites, because it's a really unique one that talks about an interesting subject when it comes to Indiana Jones, and I think does such a great job of really making you stay engaged and, kind of having that same structure that we've seen in all these comics, but still something new and exciting, which I like. And then also the interesting Marion plot that was added in there.
Yes, I liked that. I'm kind of upset that they did not add Marion like meeting Indy at all in this one. But in a way, it kind of wraps up Marion really well. Like, I mean, it almost kind of, to me, is like Marion was, this was meant to be her last comic, even though, she was supposed to be in the canceled 35. This really wraps up her character nicely.
I would actually agree with that 100%. I did feel like this almost did feel like her last appearance in a sense. And another thing as well, you talked about Mary and them never meeting. Ironically, all the comics that we've talked about, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't believe have involved Marcus in one of these adventures. Marcus is always at Marshall College, and he always talks to Indy in these comics, just like Marion does. But Marion actually comes on some of the adventures. We should definitely try and give Marcus a little bit more, talk about him a little bit more in some of these other comics that do, incorporate him a lot more. So, that was our review for issue number 25, Good as Gold. And like we mentioned in our last comic review, if you guys have any comics that you particularly like from this series that we haven't reviewed yet, let us know. You can email us at indianajonesuniverse@gmail.com or reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter. We would love to know what comic you particularly like that you would like us to review and talk about. So with that said, that about concludes today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us, and remember to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other podcast platforms. If you'd like to learn more about our podcast, be sure to check out our website at www.theindianajonesuniverse.com and follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Once again, I'm Max.
And I'm Will.
And until next time,
so long, Dr. Jones.